Good to have Mike and Tony back. We are ready for some verses in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, statements that Solomon makes related to his realization about toil, about work. He says in Ecclesiastes 2, verse 18, I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. Leave them, referring to things. Any person who has a family business can understand what he's saying, because sometimes you work hard and then you're leaving everything that you've worked for to someone else. And he says, who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool? And I did not call any of your relatives fools or wise persons, but it's creating the options. Yet he will have control over all the work into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. Verse 20 is a key verse, for my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a man may do his work with wisdom and knowledge and skill, and then he must leave all he owns to someone who has not worked for it. And other times in this book, he'll tell us, you leave it to people who don't have an interest in it. It's meaningless and a great misfortune. In verse 23, all his days, his work is pain and grief. Even at night, his mind does not rest. We've touched on that in other aspects. All the money that we might have, Ecclesiastes 5 does that. You're not able to rest at night. It ought to give you peace to have money in the bank and have the bills paid. But the reality is sometimes we can't rest at night. And we're troubled even when we should be able to rest. Solomon is concerned that he's working hard and there will be no one after him who appreciated it and who will properly use the things that are left for them. An inheritance is sometimes a good thing, many times not so good. But very quickly, verse 24, chapter 2, we see the first of six conclusions. It's the first of six in these 13 chapters. And it's putting God in the picture. And for those who were traveling or away last week, it's a difficult book because many times statements are made, and from a Christian perspective, it's different, and from a God-in-view perspective, it's different. And Solomon leaves God out for much of the book, but six times he puts God back in the picture. And we get a viewpoint of life with that point of view. And he says, verse 24, man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. It can be a toil, can be meaningless, but God's intent is that we come to appreciate it and that we find satisfaction. See the good in it. See the benefit of it. And certainly we can realize that if we're without a job, money's not so plenteous. It's difficult getting through a week, month, paying bills. We appreciate that work very much so. But he says something very specific, and I believe it's absolutely correct. This, too, I see, is from the hand of God. God gives us the ability to find satisfaction in our work. I thought about that this week, more so knowing that this part of Ecclesiastes would come up. I think work gives us purpose. We have a reason to get up. Our family, a reason to get up. Our family, a reason to clean the house, go to work, do the things we do. We have a purpose, and it comes from God. That purpose helps us to get up and do the things day by day. But he also says, I cut the statement in half because the verse did, but it says, it's from the hand of God, for without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? God gives us the ability to work and to find enjoyment in the purpose that life has for us. It's a gift from God. He says, to the man who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This, too, is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. He's telling us that the person who's not a believer, someone who doesn't acknowledge God, is going to have what he has taken away and given to those who are. Those who trust in God, those who have satisfaction, those who see gifts from God, the wisdom, knowledge, happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the work. He's given the task of work and maybe even gain from that work, but it's not going to do him a benefit. It's not going to bless him. God's going to see that someone else is blessed. So I was born on a Monday morning. I was a premature baby. Spent 5 weeks in an incubator waiting to weigh 4 pounds and 4 ounces so I could go home. And the only reason I was allowed to go home at 4:04 is my mom was a nurse and the doctor knew that she would know what to do. I've used that only to say that I love Monday mornings. I like what I get to do. I can't wait for Monday morning. And my dad told me when I went into ministry, just realize, Gary, that Sundays come around very quickly. And I have found out Wednesdays come around very quickly. But I love Monday mornings. And I hope you're that way. You might not be an early bird, but I hope you see the benefit of a work week and see that it's a blessing from God. And if you've retired or moving toward retirement, there's still blessing there because you have the gift that has been used so that you can consider retirement. That's a gift as well, and it's a benefit from your labor. But God gives us a purpose. I'm not sure what some do when they get up and don't have a sense of purpose for the things they're about to do. Your reflections, do you find those things to be true? You get up and there's something to do, and you see it as from God. And even if it's something you're doing at home, I'm not suggesting you have to go somewhere else. That purpose that you have from God helps you to begin each day, and hopefully you can finish each day feeling good about what's been accomplished. But again, it's a blessing. It's a gift from God, and we'll see that said very pointedly in the other 5 conclusions, but he certainly gives us a beginning of that understanding here. Ready to go to work already? Can't wait to get there? If you're a student, the blessing of being able to afford and to be able to get the training that you want and may need for your future, all of it, gives you a purpose, gives you a reason to get up and to be excited about it. Well, with that said, Ecclesiastes 3 is a set of opposites, 24, actually 28 items where he says time. It's a time for something. So 28 times and 14 pairs of opposites are given to us. And it allows us to develop a perspective that even though we may be surprised to some extent with things that happen in the world, these verses would remind us that everything has a time. And we ought not to be shocked, that we may not know when something's going to happen, so there's a shock element or a surprise element. But these verses ought to enable us to understand that there's nothing new under the sun, and everything's going to come in a natural time, and I need to accept that. And he begins, there's a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. Now, some would suggest there's a Calvinistic hint in that statement, in that everything is preordained and we have nothing to do with it, even our salvation. This isn't about Calvinism. It's not suggesting that everything is predetermined and we have no part in it. It's just simply saying that life has seasons. Life has times when things happen. And every day there is a death, and every day there is a birth. And there are ways, if you want to Google it, how many births were there yesterday? There's probably a way to give you an idea how many deaths were there yesterday. But it's part of life, life and death. And it's one of those things that we need to come to grips with. A time to be born, verse 2, and a time to die. From the moment we were born, we begin to die. We don't know when it will happen, and we don't know the circumstances that will bring it about. But there was a time when you were born, and it was based on the union of a man and a woman, and the fertilization of an egg, and a process of growth, 8 to 9 months, hopefully not much more, and it's time. It's something cost it, something has to happen, and at some point a birth takes place. But as soon as we are born, we need to understand that it's appointed unto man once to die, and after that he will face the judgment. And it's just the reality, and it's the spiritual insight that we should see. We'll touch on that idea in our sermon from 2 Peter 2 this morning. But a time to be born and a time to die. It's part of the life cycle. It's part of the cycle of life that it also would involve a death. A time to plant and a time to uproot. The hardest work is waiting, and that's part of our sermon this morning. But the first thing that has to take place before the farmer has to wait is the planting has to take place, and the planting takes place. What are you going to plant? Where is it going to go? When do I need to put it in the ground? And then you do it, and there's a time for that, a time based on the seasons, the atmosphere, the temperature of the ground, and all those things that I know very little about. But it's a time to plant, but there's also a time when maybe you're uprooting that which has been planting, and it's a process of getting ready for the next planting season. You clear the field so you can do this again. There's a time for that. And there's an excitement about one and not necessarily about the other. But it's part of that cycle that would be part of that planting process. There's a time to kill, and there's a time to heal. That one's harder to understand, and it doesn't necessarily have to involve a human being. There are times when you bring something to an end, and there are times when there's a new beginning. And it's difficult to take a general statement and apply it to something very specific as it would relate to the life of an individual. But there's a process. I'm not a nurse. My daughter-in-law is an RN. I know that you kill germs before you can begin healing, as far as the body is concerned, the killing of germs. So there's many aspects to that concept, but again, it's the opposites. There's a time for certain things, even to the reality of killing and healing. Two very extreme opposites in some way. Time to tear down and a time to build, the latter part of verse 3. I have enjoyed from time to time on television when they're telling us that at so-and-so time on a given day, a building is going to be imploded. Yeah, I'm trying to think. It's going to be demolished. And they've placed the dynamite and other explosive elements in the proper places, and you push a button somewhere, and in a very quick fashion, many, many, many tons of concrete just, it's done in a very scientific way. It's done in a fairly safe way. It's done because it's time to what? Tear down? Because we're putting a parking lot there, or a condo, or we're going to clear it for something. A time to tear down and a time to build. That's true in several aspects of life, but in the building industry, we certainly can explain it and see the reality of those two opposites. Remove something so that something better, something newer, can be put in its place, but it's a common event in our world, Tom.
That could be personal too. You could tear down your old way of life and build up the new relationship.
Yes, absolutely. It can be personal, Tom said. You can tear down your old way of life and be that new person. It's just a principle, though, that it's two opposites that work together. There's something that connects them, and that's the purpose of this list. A time to weep and a time to laugh. It's appropriate to shed tears when certain things occur. It can be sadness, it can be death, it can be happiness that can bring the tear, if you will. And it's appropriate. There's a time for it. It's an appropriate time, the inference. It's appropriate to shed those tears. But it's also appropriate to laugh. And when I teach Jesus going to the wedding feast, and his mother confronts him, "Son, we're running out of wine. What is that to me?" He says to his mother. In other words, it's not my time to be involved in this. And yet he does move forward. It's a reminder to me that Jesus was able to go to a wedding. And a wedding in the Jewish vernacular was a time of several hours of great joy and feasting and happiness, and it's good for us to see Jesus in those environments. It's good to see family members who many times may be more gruff than they ought to be, letting loose and enjoying themselves. And laughter at weddings, when I do the ceremony, our sense of humor is a good shock absorber in life. To be able to laugh at ourselves, to laugh at something that happened, and we look back on it. And I tell couples before the wedding begins, when we're talking about it a few days prior, that nephew may fall coming down the stairs, coming down the aisle. They may not get the flowers placed where you want them. They may not stand still during the ceremony. Don't worry about those things. You'll laugh about them later. You'll have a conversation later. Laughter, shock, a shock absorber for life. And it takes a whole lot more to be sad than it does to smile, supposedly, the muscles on our face. We need to have that release from the difficult moments, and the laughter gives that to us. Terry has told me over the years, I don't do very well with jokes. Sometimes I say something humorous. My students in China told me that I was very humorous, and I made sure they told Terry that. Apparently, I was with them and not with her. But I don't tell a lot of jokes, and I think there's a reason for that that I won't share. But it becomes personal toward a family member. But it's important for us to find humor in this world. Time to mourn and a time to dance. Same idea, two opposites. We mourn with those who mourn. We laugh with those who laugh. We celebrate with those who celebrate. And this isn't a proof text. If you've grown up and you're uncertain about whether you ought to attend dances, this isn't a proof text for that. You can figure out other ways to understand what you should or should not do. But it's an opposite of life. It's an opposite event in many of our lives. A time to scatter stones, a time to gather them. I know Jerusalem, if I'm correct with what I've been told, it's a very rocky place. And if you're going to grow things, there's a great deal of work involved in getting rid of the stones, getting it ready to plant. And sometimes you're scattering stones for a reason, and sometimes you're gathering stones. And I can think of landscapers that would fit their vernacular. But again, it's opposite. And the Jewish mind would read this. They read Ecclesiastes during the Feast of Tabernacles, the time of harvest. And I can imagine some of these spoke very clearly to what they had gone through or would soon be going through. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. I don't think this is a verse that's speaking about appropriate embracing. I don't think that's the point. I think it's general in nature, and we can make it mean more than it should. But certainly there are times when you're very comfortable and others are comfortable for there to be an embrace. And there's a time when there would not be comfort should someone begin to embrace another person. I think we go too far to give it a specific meaning. I think we can understand the purpose of the two. without trying to be so specific. Time to seek or search, and a time to give up. I wrote in my Bible, a time to seek or search, and a time to give up for lost. There's a point where you've looked long enough. I see from time to time on the internet, Coast Guard and others, people who've jumped or fallen overboard, and they will go through very specific routines to lay out the area to be searched, and very specific, and at some point, it's time to stop. If it's been 24 hours and you've been out there moment by moment looking at every square section where the event occurred, it's time to give up for loss because they're not there. They won't be found. But again, it's just helping us to understand what the two opposites could mean. It doesn't have to be someone in the water, but it could be a number of things, but at some point you quit looking. You haven't found it, you quit looking. Now, Tara and I have something we do very often. If we say something out loud, we'll find it within 10 minutes. Terry, I can't find my phone, and within 10 minutes we find it. So saying it out loud helps, and I haven't written that between my verses, but sometimes saying it out loud and then just relaxing, it helps you to find something that you've been searching for. Technically, you haven't stopped, but yes, in a way you have. But again, the opposites can be applied to several things. Time to keep and a time to throw away. How many of you have garage sales or yard sales from time to time? There's a point when something is out on the front lawn and it's been in your house or your garage for 15 years. You'll give it away or sell it for a nickel before you carry it back inside again. You're sick and tired of having it in that garage. But yard sales and things like that are principles that this can apply to, that sometimes it's more valuable and you want to keep it, and sometimes it's not so valuable. We used to have rules, some of us, that if I haven't used it in 5 years, I'm probably not going to use it in the next 5 years. But then we fudge a little bit and keep it another 5 years. If you move, if you haven't used it the whole time where you've lived, why would you go to trouble to pay someone to put it on a truck and move it to another city or state? But we do. We do because we might need it. That's what I've heard. I might need it where I'm going. But there's a time to what? Give up. And, of course, it's easier to tell someone else to give up their things rather than you give up your things. Have I kicked your shins hard enough in that one? Can you find yourself having done that? But, again, opposites. Dealing with opposites and trying to find meaning in them. A time to tear and a time to mend. I know the Jewish custom, if you are in deep despair and a family member has basically disowned you as a family, you will tear your garment. And when you tear your garment, it's a sign that they're no longer your child. They're no longer your son or daughter. You disown them. And it's a very public thing, and it's a very visible thing. And yet there may be a time where you would repair that garment once you've torn it to show your disappointment in someone's actions. But again, opposites, keeping, throwing away, tearing, mending, a time to be silent, and a time to speak. I preached a sermon here from Ephesians 5 several months ago now, and I used the illustration of two books in that sermon. The first one was a marriage book, and the wife had read it, and she felt like the husband needed some of the advice offered in the marriage book. And so she put it on his bedside table, and she noticed after many days it had not moved, and it began to gather dust. And it really upset her that he was not interested in that marriage book and had not even picked it up. And it was upsetting. He went to a bookstore later in this story, and he remembered a time when he and his wife were going out for a special evening. And she put on one of her favorite dresses, but she just made the simple comment, this doesn't fit quite the way it fit last time I wore it. And so he was at the bookstore, and he thought it made a lot of sense when he looked on the shelf and he saw a diet book. And he bought the diet book and put it on her bedside table. Now, his intent was similar to hers. You need this. But as we laughed about it, and it is a story that can help us to see the humor in it, sometimes it's more important to be silent, to not say and act on something that you perhaps think you should. There's a time to be silent, and there's a time to speak. When you do marriage counseling, you tell that young man, now what are you going to say when your wife, soon to be, when she asks you, how do you like this dress? You better practice what you're going to say. How do you like this new food recipe that she's worked on for over an hour, and you're getting ready to eat it for supper? It's probably a good practice time, a time to speak and a time to be silent. Life requires that. And you tell them, don't ever lie. But maybe saying as little as possible might be a good thing in this situation. Time to be silent. Verse 8, time to love and a time to hate. We're to hate evil. We're to hate sin, but we're to love the sinner. And there's a time to love a person because of that commonality of soul, the fact that we both have a soul, and we'll one day account for what we said and done in this life. But it's appropriate to hate sin. It's appropriate to hate sinful actions. It's appropriate. In fact, it's very much spoken of that we should not be the opposite, speaking good of evil and thinking less of good. But there's a time for both of them. And there's a time for war and a time for peace. We're going to talk about war and Christians' participation in war as part of our church history Wednesday night. It's something the early Christians went through, and it's detailed very much in the lesson as far as the different viewpoints of civil war, North-South, and any other fighting that we would be involved in. There's a time for each of those things. We're not to sit by. Jimmy Allen made this comment. I hope I remember it. Jimmy Allen, the Bible teacher at Harding for many, many years, he was in the military, went to Harding just after he left the military and was converted during that time. But he says the Bible gives us permission, if you will, to defend the innocent. And many times what we do as individuals and as countries, we're defending the innocent from whatever might be out there and be brought against them. And we have the right of self-defense. We have a legal right. God allows for self-defense. So there's a reason and a time for some of those things. Your observations, you're very quiet. Means you agree with everything I said, so I guess that's a good thing. How many of you can relate to this simple utterance in light of these 24 opposites? Life is daily. Life is daily. You never know each day what could happen. We are surprised. We are surprised with the things that happen in our world. Rick and then Terry. Yeah. Sure. You know, turning the other cheek's easy. It's easier than we make it out to be because some of us are somewhat timid anyway in our demeanor. We don't look for a fight. And so it's easier to turn the other cheek when something is done. And it's not worth it. They're not worth it. The situation that they've brought about isn't worth it. But the principle's difficult, not to fight back, not to retaliate. What did Peter tell us that Jesus did? He did not retaliate, but he handed that person over to a God who judges justly. Give them to God. It will all even out, not in your lifetime, but it will all even out, and they will pay for the things they've said and done in this life. Give it to God. Yeah. Well, I think we have the right for self-defense. Self-defense. Self-defense is defending your life. And so turning the cheek isn't defending your life and you lose your life. That's suicide. So to me, self-defense means that there's a life involved. There's a danger involved. Turning the other cheek is more a smaller item, usually very trite compared to your life being in danger. He chose to give his life as a ransom. But we have the right of self-defense. I think if you look at Scripture, you'll see that. The Old Testament tells them, and it gives them the right of self-defense. Liz? Yeah. Yeah, don't.
And I think if I do that, I'm sitting there to hell. Like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
For me, I don't know what I would do. I would try a different method, but I'm not going to shoot somebody. I
can't
do that.
Yeah. The gun issue is a viable one in our world. I'm thankful for those who carry, who protect churches on Sunday morning from the idiots that occasionally show up. And I'm thankful for that, and I hope they're good shots so that the protection is as good as it can be. I don't own a gun. I never will, but I don't take away your right to own a gun. I used to say that I'm going to have a good ball bat outside the door. But as the children have grown and left, the sports equipment's not around, So I can't grab a ball bat to defend someone and hopefully scare them to death, metaphorically. But I think we protect the innocent and we have the right of self-defense. And this word war, the word used on our lesson for Wednesday night is pacifism. I'm a conscientious objector. I objected to carrying a weapon in the military, and I received a deferment in college. When I came out, I had to go because my number was drawn. I was 38 when they drew numbers that night and assigned every male in America a number, and if it was over 100 and something, you were pretty much free. If it was under whatever the number was, you were guaranteed of being called into service. Terry's dad was a conscientious objector. My younger brother and I were conscientious objectors. Our brother-in-law was a conscientious objector, and we were able to serve in other ways. The Vietnam War was ending as I was ready to do my conscientious objector's work, and my younger brother, he was allowed to go to Vanderbilt Hospital and work in a hospital to fulfill his responsibilities. I was able to go to a child care and orphanage adoption agency to fulfill my responsibility because at that time they didn't care. The Vietnam War had been raging so long, and they just really did want to fool with it, tell you the truth. And I was very thankful that they made some allowances at that time. Terry's dad was sent to a work camp and went to several places in America as a captured worker, if you will. So it's changed by the time I came around. But anyway, there's a time for so many things. Life is daily. So don't be surprised with what you hear in the news. Turn it off if it's hard to watch or hear. Lessen the drama that you subject yourself to by watching less or reading less. I read less now in the news than I ever have, but I go to several places to look at headlines. And I'll read more if I'm interested, but I want to know what's going on. But I don't want to subject myself to so much of the drama that's out there. And that's a choice that I would recommend for you. Let's stop there. We only have 2 minutes, but he goes in another direction and actually has another conclusion and brings a couple of things up in this second conclusion that we'll wait and see it next week, Lord willing. Thank you.